New birth. Let it come forth, because time and space are mental illusions. Since this is the beginning of a new year, the thought occurred to me to take a look at the beginning of the Bible and the beginning of science and health. The Bible, beginning in Genesis 1, verse 1, states, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." Mary Baker Eddy translates that to mean, "In the only." The only creation there is a product of the creation of God. And since there is no time or space, everything always was. I wonder what percentage of the population that follow the Bible realize that there is a requirement on each and every one of us. Let's presume that Mary Baker Eddy is correct, and she says that the only creation is a creation of God. And she defines God on page 465 of Recapitulation as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. So the qualities did the work. Now, what about our involvement? How many times do you suppose the word "let" is used in the first chapter of Genesis? Every significant statement includes it. Let there be light. It's the first day of creation. Next thing it states is to let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. Is anyone getting the idea that we have to be involved? So far, only 2 days are covered. Already have several lets. Next it says, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. The next is, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth. And it was so. So far, we've only made it to 3 days, and someone besides God has to do a lot of work, a lot of letting. Here's the next day. And God said, let there be light in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. We have 4 days complete now. A lot of work by someone besides God. We're now into day 5. And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creatures that hath life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. Then God says, let fowl multiply in the earth. That's the end of day 5. And here is day 6. Let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. Then God says, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Well, that's the end of day 6. And, as probably everyone realizes, the 7th day was the day of rest. Well, what do you think about this? What came to me is that God did the creating, but God's manifestation has to get the right view by looking through the lens of spirit in order to reflect the creation of God, in order for it to be an individual experience. Otherwise, God's creation does absolutely no good in individual experience. We miss the boat. Unless we are Jesus and can walk on water out to where the boat is, in the middle of the water, we're in trouble. We'll be like Peter. We will sink. In order for us to benefit individually from this wonderful creation that has abundance of everything, and we must keep in mind that what is visible is simply a symbol of the invisible qualities of God. So we're not talking about fish, we're not talking about cattle, we're not even talking about man. We're talking about qualities of God that are in infinite abundance. And we will miss the whole boat. The whole show will evaporate. We'll never even see it unless we L-E-T, let. Let God be in our lives day and night, in everything we think, say, and do. Mary Baker Eddy invited Ira Knapp to her home, and he had lost his wife, and so he brought his son with him, who was a young boy, and to give Bliss something constructive to do, although at the time he didn't appreciate that it was constructive for the reason that it really was. But Mary Baker Eddy gave him a handheld fan. It was probably a warm day. And then they excused themselves and went into her meeting room with him for a private meeting. So he was out there in the waiting area with this fan. Later, it was discovered that the fan was a symbol for separating the tares and the wheat. And that can only be done at the time of harvest, which I believe is translated, at least to me, to mean that we have recognized all of the material beliefs that need to be eradicated from the tares, and that's the time of harvest in which we can separate them. We can't do it until they are recognized, because they are like a snake, which is the symbol for medicine. It is deceitful. It is presented as being an attractive solution, but that may be very deceptive. Keeping in mind that Jesus did not partake of it. Looking at Mary Baker Eddy in the beginning of the textbook to see what she wanted to alert us to as introductory quotes is as follows. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. From John 8:32. Ye shall know, understand. This isn't just a statement that is glibly made. We have to go to work. If we want to be free, if we want to be liberated from the shackles of the belief that life, truth, and intelligence are in matter, or mortal mind, or electricity, any kind of animal, magnetism, mesmerism, hypnotism, you name it. Anything that is unlike God is what we're talking about. And that's probably 50%, maybe more, of the words in the entire English dictionary. The second, from Shakespeare, there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Are we going to let all of those things be a part of our consciousness that are in the first chapter of Genesis up through verse 3 of chapter 2? Are we going to use a fan to separate truth from error, the absolute from the relative? Separate everything unlike God? Get it out of the way so that we can see the truth? It is all dependent upon our view. Are we looking through the lens of spirit? We must remember that there is both conscious and unconscious thought. There is both fact and fable. In other words, universal belief and individual belief. So we're dealing with at least six elements. The obvious conscious, the unconscious, the belief that is both conscious and unconscious, and the universal that is both conscious and unconscious. and the facts. I guess that's eight. Conscious and unconscious facts. Everything that is in our thought is reflected out into the atmosphere. What do we want to add to the atmosphere? That's the purpose of the fan. The third and final quote as an introduction to the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, is as follows. And this is by Mary Baker Eddy. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere. There was an attraction to read the first sentence of the preface, because that is the beginning of the content. To those leaning on the sustaining infinite, today is big with blessings. There are quotes in the Bible that relate to the topic, which is new birth, but I will skip those, as I believe the topic is covered very well in Science and Health. A key element here is to deny the false sense of birth, which is what is commonly thought of as being birth. But that is based on a material sense of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. So I will skip that and read specific sentences that Mary Baker Eddy has stated about the new birth. On page 191, under the paragraph title of The Immortal Birth, she states, as a material theoretical life basis is found to be a misapprehension of existence, the spiritual and divine principle of man dawns upon human thought and leads it to where the young child was, even to the birth of a new old idea, to the spiritual sense of being and of what life includes. Thus, the whole earth will be transformed by truth on its pinions of light, chasing away the darkness of error. Now, in those statements, the word life and truth are capitalized, as is principle. So she's referring to God. By the way, that quotation that was entitled The Immortal Birth is from the chapter on physiology. In the chapter that is entitled Genesis, chapter 15, she refers back to what was brought out previously about letting. And on page 548, she says, under the paragraph titled The Clouds Dissolving, how little light or heat reach our earth when clouds cover the sun's face. So Christian Science can be seen only as the clouds of corporeal sense roll away. Earth has little light or joy for mortals before life is spiritually learned. Every agony of mortal error helps error to destroy error, and so aids the apprehension of immortal truth. This is the new birth going on hourly, by which men may entertain angels, the true ideas of God, the spiritual sense of being. When one talks about birth, they are obviously referring to time and space, and in that regard, it is common knowledge that one of the experts on that was Dr. Albert Einstein. He spent his life devoted to the study of physics, and he was particularly enthralled with the concept of time. And because of his sincere study of Christian Science, he made a couple of statements that are very emphatic. And the reason I say that is because it is absolutely contrary to his life's work, because he was studying about time and space as a physicist, and therefore was inundated in thought with all of the various elements of time and space. And around approximately 1950, he made the statement, "Imagine a woman knew this 80 years ago." And what was he referring to? A couple of other statements that he made. He said, "Blessed art thou," referring to Mary Baker Eddy. "Everything that is in this book," referring to Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And it was very difficult for him to digest the possibility that a woman had discovered it 80 years before. Now, quantum mechanics was first discovered around 1900. And quantum mechanics was the branch of physics whereby they had discovered that what we see and what we feel, touch, and so forth, is consciousness and not something that is tangible. It feels tangible, it looks tangible, but they discovered it was really energy that was vibrating at a high rate of speed. Dr. Einstein had a friend named another Dr. Underwood. And by the way, all this information is on the website, either by going to the author index, searching for his last name. And currently, there is a link directly from the main menu. Anyway, his friend, Dr. Underwood, was on the atomic research team. This was back in World War II days, 80 years ago. And Dr. Underwood was the only one that survived the atomic research team. Others all passed on due to exposure to radiation. That really got Dr. Einstein's attention, because he knew the man and he saw the experience take place. And he saw other friends that he knew that had been healed of various other things. Well, Frederick Rawson was an expert on electricity, and companies came to him from all over to solve problems that they were unable to solve. He was also very adept at chemistry, and he witnessed the change of DNA as a result of Christian Science treatment. he saw that it was evolving around electricity and proper Christian Science treatment actually changed those electrical currents so that they shorted out. And shorting out the inharmonious circuits was really what the change of the DNA was all about. This is what he says about time and space. This is from page 79 of his book entitled Life Understood. And that's also on the website under his last name of Rawson. I don't believe I mentioned it, but the website name is mbeinstitute.org. A consistent theory of material phenomena with a subtitle of The Metaphysical View of Time and Space. The fallacy of what is called time is easily seen on looking at it from a purely metaphysical standpoint. In mind, everything is available. In heaven, you only have to think of anything to have it. There is no limit of time in eternity. All the vistas of the past and present are spread out to the mental vision at the moment they are thought of. No gulf of time separates the thinker from his thoughts. Hence, no time limit enters into the purely mental realm, and there is no other. The only gulf of any description that even separates mankind from good is the gulf of vacuity or ignorance of an ever-present God expressed in infinite and perfect spiritual ideas filling all space and always available to man. We have now learnt that the so-called material accomplishments of any experience have no more reality than the sense entertained of them, and have also proved the practical effect produced on so-called material phenomena by thought, corrected in accordance with the ideal standard. We can therefore face intelligently a so-called past event with the same assurance that we can face a present difficulty, knowing that both are merely false impressions. Each must be reduced to the common denominator, absolute good, which is the requirement of God in accordance with Scripture and therefore in accordance with principle. We, in this state of consciousness, can now prove by demonstration that which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been, and God requireth that which is past. That's from Ecclesiastes 3:15. Here's a quote from Whittier. I'm still reading from Mr. Rawson's book, Life Understood. I didn't look it up, but it's probably John Greenleaf Whittier. And the quote is, "The past and the time to be are one, and both are now." It is of great value to recognize this power and to see that there is no loss of time between the moment when a patient turns to God in the form of writing to a practitioner for help, and the time the consequent prayer or treatment is humanly said to commence. This knowledge is invaluable in many different ways. When, for instance, you have been in conversation with anyone and have forgotten to work for the mutual benefit by realizing heaven as you speak, knowing that in the perfect world, man speaks truth and man knows truth, as the only action is that is of God, truth. You can make up for this by work done afterwards. You must not forget, however, that a golden opportunity has been lost, as you might have prayed at the time and afterwards as well, and so more completely cleared away wrong thoughts. Space is merely an apparent limitation in human consciousness, which fails to recognize the unity of the one mind and its one consciousness, the Christ. The subjective states of evil, called mortal mind or matter, are negatives destitute of time and space, for there is none besides God or Spirit, and the idea of Spirit. That's from Know and Yes by Mary Baker Eddy, page 16. Every great advance in the sciences consists of a vast generalization revealing deep and subtle analogies. That's a footnote number one. Footnote number two, the notion of space is as little clear as that of time. Leibniz defined it as the order of coexistence of phenomena, time being the order of their succession. Space and time are perhaps two forms of the same thing. That's stated in a book entitled The Evolution of Forces by Dr. Laban, another famous physicist. That's the end of the text on that title of A Consistent Theory of Material Phenomena, The Metaphysical View of Time and Space by Frederick L. Rawson. And there's one short paragraph I would like to read. This is from another book by Frederick Rawson entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And it states as follows on page 246. There is no want of time. Man lives and works in eternity, knowing no limitation. For in him we live and move and have our being. That's from Acts 17:28. The only time is the unfolding of God's ideas. Everything is done instantly. All God's ideas are finished and complete and unfold to man with unfailing regularity, idea after idea. And man represents these ideas instantly. All is done in the right way and at the right time. For God is the only worker and is the principle of all law and all order. And man is governed by law and order. That's from page 246 of that book. A wonderful way to begin the new year is to bring about our own new birth. And an excellent place to start is by utilizing a book entitled Your Divinity Revealed by Helen Wright. And there are seven specific chapters, one chapter on each synonymous term. And she does the most fantastic job that we have seen here at the Institute in explaining thoroughly what the synonymous term means and connecting it with all of the ancillary terms that point to the primary synonymous term and how it connects with all the other synonymous terms. And there are 7 MP3 treatments, topics, on the 7 synonymous terms on our website. And there has been a connection made in those that utilize the words that Mary Baker Eddy used in describing each of the 7 synonymous terms. In thinking about the new year, is there any reason to regurgitate failures of the last 12 months? Or should we analyze anything that didn't work out correctly and see if there's an opportunity to turn it from a lemon to a lemonade? If there were mistakes made, we certainly cannot build on them. We need to correct the mistakes and then build on the repaired consciousness which is expressed in the manifestation of the activity. And this is no matter whether it is an event or a relationship with an individual or whatever the situation is, if there was a mistake made, Mary Baker Eddy says we need to square our account. And she says we should do it every day. We cannot look for someone else to do this for us. There's no one that has the authority to forgive someone else's sins. No matter what you pay or what act that you do to try to make amends to someone that is unrelated to the situation, we need to take the bull by the horns and deal with it directly. The only intermediary we want to deal with are the Bible and Mary Baker Eddy's writings and the writings of other fine messengers of God. Those are our tools, the tools that are available. And thank you for the internet and the printing press and instant communication and all those kinds of tools that make it easy for us to utilize these wonderful utilities in assisting us to spiritualize our thought, to move down the path of infinite progression so that we can see progress in striving for concrete being. Amen.